Before we start the podcast this week, we'd like to take a moment to remember the great Theo Dunne. Theo captained the Reds to an FAI Cup win in 1963 and went on to lead the team out against Barcelona in the Nou Camp in the following season's Cup Winners' Cup. We'd like to send our condolences to Gavin and Evan, our current first team players, after the loss of their grandfather, and our thoughts and prayers are with all of Theo's family and friends.
The 1895 podcast is brought to you by Off the Ball, official media partner of Shelburne FC. The 1895, the official Shelburne podcast, exclusive to Patreon.
The ball sinks in towards where Davy Rogers is up. Rogers leaves the left. Oh, Davy Rogers! Oh, what a goal by Davy Rogers!
I'm angry, Tony, I have to be honest.
Murray! Bartry Shelburne! Noel Murray! Has she won it for the Reds? What a goal!
Here's a chance up. Shane Farrell. And Shells lead 2-0.
I'm sorry, Tony, but I'm angry as well. I was angry before the game. I've been angry for a long time.
She gets the winning goal here. Slattery! Oh. Into the back of the net. That is what champions do. That is what winners do. Pearl Slattery.
Over the top by Sullivan. Hughes. Goal. Shelburne lead.
His cross stick for Vegas.
Kilduffy is the substitute and he scored! Shells lead!
We are in to the 94th minute and yeah! It's all over!
Shelburne FC are first division champions!
It's our just reward. We deserve this. We deserve this big time.
Here's your host, Stephen Doody.
Hello, welcome to the 1895 podcast. And finally, we're back. Back to normality. No more Friday nights sitting in, watching a film, maybe watching a Premier League game, maybe going out to watch a Leinster Senior League game. It's all over. I have my life back. The Reds are back on Friday. And here to preview Drogheda game. And here just for a little chat, a little check-in, Darren Cleary, you're back again.
There's a tone of just you're resigned to I'm stuck with him for the next 40 minutes. Thanks very much for the warm welcome. Glad to be back and excited to be previewing the new season with you.
Yeah, you've had a busy couple of weeks, a very, very busy couple of weeks. You're still here. You got a little break. Well, when I say a little break from the Reds, it wasn't really much of a break. You were still getting tormented about stuff, but for anyone that doesn't know, Darren got married to lovely Laura and then they went off on their honeymoon. How has the last couple of weeks been for you?
Been lovely. Yeah, it's been a great few weeks. Really enjoyable. Looking forward now to the start of the season. But yeah, we've had a lovely few weeks.
I know it's just dawned on me there talking about weddings and all kind of stuff. It's Valentine's Day when we record this, so it's Tuesday. And me and you, I'm sitting in my box room here, surrounded by loads of rubbish that we couldn't find a spot for in the house yet, recording a podcast. You've just finished your dinner and you're jumping straight onto the old podcast with me. Valentine's not a big thing in your house, Dazzler.
I bought myself a little bit of credit in the bank. I went to the centre today and I bought a packet of flowers. I don't know what you got, a bunch of flowers and a box of chocolates. And your man, I think he thought he was doing me a favour. He's like, you know, those flowers will be 30% off tomorrow and the chocolates will be €3 cheaper. I'm like, yeah, but they're not much use to me tomorrow. He's like, oh, just letting you know. So yeah, I've got a bit of credit in the bank. I bought chocolates and flowers and we had honeymoon and everything. So I'd say my other half is now sick of the sight of me. I was only delighted when I said, oh, I'm going to do the Shells podcast now to get rid of me for an hour.
Yeah, I didn't buy even a single thing. I think the first 2 years, maybe Valentine's Day was a thing, and then I got a bit lazy, and that's been the end of it. Nevertheless, I'm babbling. So it's since the last pod I was here with Adam. Probably the most exciting thing that's happened: a new signing. Do you want to tell us a little bit about our new arrival?
I'd love to be able to tell you a bit about our new arrival, but I don't know a thing about him, which I know
well,
isn't.
In fairness, that's my fault. You haven't really been, you've been off duty, we can say, for the last couple of weeks. So Yeah, again, look, it's Keane Levy. He's arrived in on loan from Reading until June. I've seen there today that his contract with Reading is actually up in June. So I presume, you know, we've just taken him till the end of his contract, and it's probably Reading will have a look at him and see what he has to offer in kind of a more competitive setting, and they'll make a decision on him then. But I didn't realise his contract was up in June, so there might actually be a bit of scope to hold on to him after June if things go well. Obviously, just about 20 minutes before we came on here as well, it was announced that Adair Irvine has gone on loan to Longford. Starting a little bit out of blue maybe, but was, do you think that was a consequence of signing Keane Levy on loan? And maybe he thought, oh, here, I'm maybe dropping down the pecking order a bit.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It seems like when most managers try to settle their squad in that last kind of 2 or 3 weeks before the season starts, like last season and this season has been a time where the manager has probably looked to see who's impressed him. Like we saw Yo-Yo Matty leave at this time last year. He went up to Finn Harps, and we saw A leave this year. So it's hard to know. He's gone back to Longford until the summer anyway, so it's not a full season loan. It's only until the midsummer break. So it could be a case if he goes down, drops down a division, shoots the lights out in Longford, and it could be an option for us in the summer. But yeah, I was probably a little bit surprised. I would have thought we had a settled squad, but then again, I was surprised we brought in Keane. I didn't think we were doing any other signings. So I thought go wait on my honeymoon and there wouldn't be any Shells news. So I was delighted to actually just see the name pop up and get that bit of excitement about, oh, who's it going to be? Was nice not to know for a change. But I'm surprised that he's left. I think he always acquitted himself well. His last few weeks were at the end of last year. Like, I think he scored his first goal for the Reds against Drogheda, if I'm not mistaken. Probably the best player in the cup final. He started the cup final ahead of Mark Coyle. Probably caught a few people by surprise, but he'd earned his inclusion. He played really, really well. We've obviously strengthened in midfield. We've brought bodies in. We've retained the bodies the manager would have wanted to keep. The likes of JJ Lunny, Coyle, brought in Evan Caffrey. Like, I'm not surprised that we have an ability to allow him to leave. I think he's the kind of guy, he's a competitive player. I don't think he would have settled for being a squad member, squad player. So it might just be one of these things that it's in everyone's benefits. It's happened at times in the last few years where players haven't been happy with their lot. I suppose one good example, I think J.R. Wilson, there was talk of him going to Drogheda around the middle of last season, before the middle of last season, was out of the team, wasn't really playing. You look at the start of our cup run, like he would have been third or fourth choice in the pecking order, you know, behind Ryan McManus, Shane Farrell, a few others. So he turned it around then, he got the opportunity. So it's interesting when, you know, players kind of express a desire to move on, or reportedly express a desire to move on, and then ultimately end up staying put. And you saw what happened last year with JR. He went on to have a brilliant kind of last third of the season. He was one of our most consistent and strongest performers in that time. So I think those honest and open conversations around players' roles within the squad, they can go one or two ways. They can either give them a platform to push on at Shells, or they can give them an option like Yo-Yo and now A to move on and try things elsewhere.
So are you saying Adair Irvine might end up playing in Egypt next year or two?
I don't think he has the complexion for it. I don't think he's... If you like,
he
Steve
would
Stanton,
have...
World Cup 90, the 94 World Cup with the big hat on him.
He'll have to just jump into a big bath full of sun cream every morning before he goes out.
Fact or fifth day.
It feels like one of them ones kind of works for everybody. Like, yeah. When you look at it on paper, he probably would have struggled for game time here. Obviously, he's from Longford, so he'll probably be comfortable down there. And as you say, it either works out that he's brilliant and he sets the first division alight, and it might be something, you know, that Duffer has to look at, or he may go down there and, you know, maybe wallow a little bit and not be too good, and then Duffer can say, right, well, that's that decision kind of made. So I'd wish him well. I wouldn't have any... You know, it's not a thing of, oh, he's left this stage like that. Leave him at it. Hopefully it works out for him. Speaking of midfielders, happy birthday, Mark Coyle. I don't want to miss out on a birthday, because one person in particular moaned at me about missing a birthday. So No.
Go on, name
it. It'll come out at the right time. You don't worry about that. Now, you're only back here. This is your first one of the season and you're trying to stir it already.
This is what this podcast needs. This podcast needs a little bit of drama.
Yeah. Speaking of stirring it, can you tell me why our manager has a knack of just riling people up over the most mundane comments, that the amount of silly things that other managers have said in pre-season already, or interviews other managers are doing, and I couldn't care less. But other people seem to be very, very interested in what our manager has to say. Is that ever going to stop?
I don't know. I find it a bit weird myself. I'd say he does as well, to be honest. It's like, no matter what is said, whether it's a cliche, whether it's a thoughtful, kind of introspective line, no matter what it is, people will always seem to take a gripe on it. It's a bit mad. I can't tell you one thing Tim Clancy or Stevie O'Donnell or Rory Higgins has said in preseason, because I don't care. It's not of any concern to me. Like, it's one of these where managers will obviously try and, either depending on their resources, talk up or talk down their chances, maybe set expectations, maybe try and control expectations at their football club. I'm surprised by the amount of airtime people give to a club that they spend the rest of their time saying is irrelevant and unimportant. It's a bit bizarre, I have to say.
And all he said was that he reckoned we were probably the most improved team over the course of the season, which, if you were watching, obviously everyone's not watching every single team every week, but from Michelle's point of view, we did massively improve. And I know the form on paper wasn't great for that last kind of, what would you say, 5, 6, 7 games. But we were a totally different team when we finished the season to when we started. Like, we were not great at the start of last season at all. Only for that Drogheda game, the second game of the season, where we bet them 2-0 down there and Mark Coyle got chewing gum thrown at him. Like, I think we could have been in a lot more trouble last year with the start we had. So if you compared the first, say, 4 or 5 games to the middle 4 or 5 games, and then our performances, we weren't quite getting the results towards the end of last season, but we were playing well. Like, I just don't see why you'd be so bothered by that. It just seems a bit kind of mad.
But there's a lot of scoreboard reaction in this league, and there's people don't actually watch the matches of their rivals. So they see the result and they're like, oh, Shells have lost 4-0. Shells must be shite. Oh, Shells have won 6-0. They must be deadly. There's very little scope for any kind of considered or measured opinion. When you look over that, the results of that kind of closing third of the season, whatever it was, 1 or 2 league wins in 8 or 9 games, but that doesn't tell the full story. We could have and should have beaten Rovers away. We should have beaten Derry away. We should have beaten Pats at home 4-4. Mental, mad game. And the games were just so, so tight. Like, we were, our ability to compete in that part of the season compared to, like, the 3-0 loss at home to Finn Harps, the 1-0 loss away to Harps. Like, we were just a different team towards that part of the season. And the improvements from the first kind of fixture, like round of fixtures, the first 10 games with the last one, it's night and day. Like, I was surprised there was so much pushback around it, because anyone who would have watched a bit of Shells would have told you, like, that we were a much, much stronger and better team. Like, we absolutely swept our neighbours aside in the cup quarter final. Like, they did not lay a glove on us. We bet Waterford in the cup with relative ease. Don't forget, Waterford were the team that knocked out Pats and Dundalk. So I think there was probably an ability to downplay some of our positive results, downplay some of our development, because it didn't suit a couple of people's agenda, and that's just part of it. Like, I remember when Pats came to play us that time, what were they on, a 6-7 game winning streak or unbeaten streak,
something like that? Yeah, yeah,
they were playing really well, and we just cut them apart. Now, we should have won the game at 4-2, and we didn't see it out, and that's disappointing, but it's still the most mental game of football I've ever seen. Up in Derry, we're 1-0 up. We should have seen that game out again. It's really good game management. We're a bit fortuitous. You know, Moylan gets the goal off a bit of a Brian Maher howler. But like, yeah, the difference between us at that time of the season at the start, like, there's no comparison. So to just say it's such a throwaway remark of we really improved, I'm very pleased with that. I'm not sure of any team made as much improvements. What people don't realize is he's saying we were pretty poor at the start of the season.
Yeah.
Like, and by the end of it, we could compete with anyone, which is, again, I wouldn't have thought earth-shattering news.
No, but it always will be. If that man opens his mouth, everyone gets excited for some reason. I don't know why. I'll never grasp that one, but look, we're all built differently. On the pitch, we obviously had our last pre-season game last Friday night. It was away to Galway. A 1-1 draw. I couldn't make it. I was hoping to get down, but just got out of work too late. Wasn't going to be worth the trip. I probably wouldn't have even got all of the second half in. So, obviously, it's hard to give an opinion on it. I asked Adam this last week. How much stock do you put into preseason?
None at all. Like, it's easy to say that when we've had a decent preseason. We had a bad preseason, maybe I'd be like, oh, things haven't been great. Fitness, sharpness, two big things. Conditioning is a big one as well. And, yeah, no injuries, come through unscathed. Like, it's not really about results. Like, I couldn't tell you any of our results from last year's preseason, not a single one. And because they don't make a difference, all they're designed to do is get your bodies in shape, get off a bit of the ring rust, and get you ready for this Friday night. So, yeah, I wouldn't be overly excited or deflated by the results. Performances, it's good to see the goal from the last day. It looked like a really decent individual goal. I think it was Robinson who showed an unbelievable amount of pace on the right-hand side to set up the new boy for a relatively straightforward finish. And yeah, like, stuff like that is nice to see, obviously. But no, I just think get bodies right.
Yeah, the starting 11 was interesting because I presumed that the starting 11 last Friday would be the starting 11 for the Drogheda game. Now, ultimately, I was left with egg on my face because I came out with the theory, you've heard the theory as well, that the keeper that plays under lights is the one that starts the season. And I think Scott van der Sluis had started nearly all the games under lights. And then, of course, last Friday, it turns on its head and Conor Kearns started. So that starting 11, I'll just rattle through it quickly. It was Kearns, Wilson, Barrett, Luke Byrne, Cam, Tyreek, Wilson, Malloy and Lunny were the two midfielders, and then Farrell, Moylan and Smith were the front three, if you like. Do you see him deviating far from that this week?
I don't actually know. It's a hard one. I was glad to see Lukey get minutes because
yeah.
I think we've all established that us with Luke and us without Luke, he just brings so much. There was a bit of worry. I know he went off early the last day, but it wasn't an injury issue. It was more so a bit of a knock. He got a gash on his head and that's all it was. So I'm hoping there's nothing that would stop him from playing on Friday, which is a positive piece of news. We'd obviously have the manager will give his team news bulletin and that'll be out probably Thursday evening this week. So we'll know more a bit then. But it'd be hard to see him deviate too far from that. I don't know if you read into this as a theory, but I think Conor Kearns has got the number one jersey in squad numbers. Now, I don't know if that means anything, but...
Yeah, that's a fair point. I don't know. I'm very used to Shells having, like, the keeper who just always played. Like, even when the likes of Dino and all that, like, it was just kind of... He was going to play and that was the end of it. Mm. So then that kind of... This seems to be the tightest couple of keepers that I can remember. You know, I don't know if there's much between them. I know we haven't seen much of Scott, but I don't know what it is. I just think there's a bit of... There's definitely competition there. I don't think it's as nailed on as it might look. Like, everyone will look at it and think Kearns is going to be the number one. But I don't know. I'm not really sure of it. The other...
But if you're a manager, right, and you look back to the start of last year and Lewis Webb started in goal last year, and for all intents and purposes, it made sense. He was young. He was well-rated. He's an underage international with Wales. coming from a big club, obviously moving here on loan, there's an expectation that, especially as a goalkeeper, he has to get minutes. He was in from the start. His distribution was poor enough. He wasn't particularly commanding at set piece time. He was a good shot stopper, but I would say probably in that first kind of 6-7 games that he played cost us points. I'd say if you're the manager, you're really aware of that. You're really aware of how important it is to get that call right and stick with it, because it's one of those, like, going into the first game of the season, you don't really want to be trying to figure out who's your number one. You want to know who your number one is. So I would say it's probably a bit more solidified in the eyes of the management team than maybe last year was, because they didn't know Brendan Clark last year. They did. Damien and Joey and Alan Quinn didn't know him. They didn't know Lewis Webb. So they were kind of trying to make a judgment over the course of pre-season. This year, they have the advantage of they've worked with Scott van der Sloosh for, you know, what he came in this summer last year. So they've worked with him for a good period of time. They have an idea of what he's about. And they'll obviously have watched Conor Kearns for a lot of time at Galway and be able to get reports on him. So I'd say they probably have a much clearer picture in their head going into this season of who that number one will be. And I don't know if I'd be surprised if we see the same thing of, you know, a keeper starting out for a couple of games and then it changes to a new number one.
Sorry, what did you just call Scott there? Say his surname again.
Scott van der Sloosh.
Is it Sloosh?
What do you call him?
Sluice.
Sloosh? Sloosh? Slush?
Sluice.
Slush. Scott van der Sloosh would be?
We're going to have to get after that one and find out what the story is there. Yeah.
Scott van der Sloosh. Sloosh.
I know he's particular about the spelling of it. Small V, small D.
And the dashes.
Yes. Yeah, I was corrected on that one before.
Yeah, Duty's admin time is the Twitter admin.
My hairline is not good at the best of times, but geez, it crept back another inch or so, I'd say, that couple of weeks.
Now you know how I feel every week.
True. It's funny talking about the goalkeeping situation last year and Lewis Webb started and then Clarkey came in, and I'll stand by the fact that he changed the whole season when he came in as the first choice keeper. That was when I kind of looked at Duffer and Joey and kind of the staff and went, right, we're going to be all right here, because getting a keeper like that on loan from England, it's very easy to be a bit stubborn and say, no, I'll stick with him. Lewis had a couple of games in a row where he wasn't good and it was right out and Clarkey's in. And that was the end of it. Didn't look back after it. So let's hope we don't have too many heart in mouth moments from the goalkeepers going forward this year.
And to be fair, to give him a bit of credit, he made some good saves as well. Like he had a strange kind of run in red, because he made a brilliant save out in UCD in the 0-0 game, the sprinkler game. I think it was our second game of the season, and probably earned us a point that night. But then up in Dalymount, he cost us 2 points by just not coming for the last corner. Just
being soft, yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, and don't come on here again and come out with the shot stopper line. I don't want to go full Roy Keane on you, but
that's his job.
Yeah, like if he can't keep the ball out of the net, like what? You may as well be playing centre half at that stage.
It was his strongest attribute.
Yeah, the way I look at it, I just want a keeper with that kind of calm presence, that kind of everyone relax. There's nothing wrong. There's no pressure. There's no stress. What are we all worrying about? And I think that's why I like Clarkey so much in goal, because he was the calmest player on the pitch. Didn't matter what was going on around him. He was just chilled out.
Clarkey's in the past.
Do you know what I just got a vision of? Do you remember the game when he lost the plot altogether? I think it was an away game. And he just lost his mind. He ran about 40 yards out of his goal to have a pop at the ref. And I don't remember what game that was, but yeah, I don't know. Clarkey's just one of them. I'll forever miss Clarkey. Right.
I remember one of my favourite ones was up in Derry, and someone called you and you were kind of looking around behind you and you're like, who is fucking calling me? Like, Duty. And it was like, then you look over, it's like, oh, it's Clarkey. He's like, how long is left?
Yeah. Yes. And Arden, I was trying to catch his attention then to kind of, like, I was throwing my fingers around and I'm trying to, like, and it was a really awkward number. It was like 13 or something like that. It wasn't even like 7 or 8 where you just hold up that number of fingers. It was like, I was trying to flash my hands at him to let him know what was going on. But yeah, I don't remember that now. That was a very weird stuff. It's also weird that he looked, now I've got a big old head, in fairness, I'm fairly easy to notice, but strange that he was able to spot me from that far away. Right, come on, back onto this year. You're throwing me off track here.
It's a creeping hairline, dude.
Stop this.
I recognize that head. Actually, I should mention, that's probably the most I've ever, I thought I was going to have a panic attack at that game because I laughed so much. Adam Manifold, one of the great Reds men, he was just at top form that night.
One of the greatest rants I've ever heard in my entire life. And none of it could be repeated on here.
Zero.
We'd be cancelled straight away if we mentioned any of it on here. But that's not an over-exaggeration to say it was one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my entire life.
I just couldn't stop laughing. At one stage, I actually could not catch my breath from laughing. And I was like, oh, geez, I'm in a spot of bother here. Like, it was just, yeah. Those away trips are great. And then I remember when Derry got the equaliser, they were like, oh, yeah, some lads like shouted, ah, how do you like that? You don't like that up you. And Ado just roared back, we don't even fucking want to win this game. We're going for a league.
Yeah, somebody else, I think, let a roar down of, nobody cares.
that was one of the great games. Good thing Adam's not here, because he wouldn't be able to share his memories of it, because I don't think he made it off the bus.
Oh. Speaking of vomiting, Dan Carr actually... Didn't he end up in a fairly bad way in that game as well? That was a mad trip altogether, that one. Me, myself, you and Ben were squashed into the van driving up. We, on the way back, stopped into the garage and bumped into the Finn Harps players who were after playing, I think it was Bowes, were going the other way, and they were pleading with us to get a result the following week off. Who was it? We were playing somebody. It was obviously Drogheda or UCD or something like that.
Drogheda, I think.
Yeah, they were pleading with us to get a result.
It was UCD
against.
UCD on the Monday night, we were crap. Remember, we drew 1-1.
Yeah, insert team name here on a Monday night, and we were crap. Just pretty much can go together. Right, mom, back to the football. Yeah, throwing me off altogether here.
Sorry, am I disturbing you? No. You didn't even get to mention, you mentioned Dan Carr for a second. You mentioned half mentioned he got sick, then you went straight to the
I missed the best part.
I lost my purple snack.
Best part.
Yeah.
I have never seen somebody do a quicker U-turn in my entire life. You reminded me of me when I was a kid going to games, and like, you'd be walking out of the ground and you might see one of the players. You might see a Wezzo or a Jason Byrne or Dave Crawley walking out with Holke, and I'd be like, oh, slow down. They might walk past us and I can say hello to them. You had a moment like that in a garage in the middle of nowhere, where we had been in the garage. A garage that at 1 o'clock in the morning was selling chicken fillet rolls.
Which, a hot deli. A fresh deli too.
A fully stocked hot deli. I'd never seen the likes of it before, only in the country. But we had been in, got our bits and pieces, got back into the van, and the Shells team bus pulled in to the same garage for a quick stop off. And you, like a little fanboy, were straight back into the garage. Oh, hey, lads. Oh, yeah. Just on my way into the garage here. Who wants to have a chat? Never seen the likes of it in my life.
First of all, that's not true, right? I hate to burst.
What part of that isn't true?
I'll tell you my recollection. I bought a jambon, a sausage roll, a purple snack, and a bottle of Lucozade. I had the purple snack in my pocket. I forgot about that. That's a story for a different day. I ate my jambon, I ate my sausage roll, and I drank my 500ml bottle of Lucozade. The big one, not the 380 one, the small one. Before we left, because we were probably still about two and a half hours away, I said, I'm going to piss. The bus was coming in, and he goes, oh, you're just going in now to chat to everyone. And I said, ha, no, I'm not. I'll prove you wrong. I'll just hold it until the next garage. So I did not go back in.
Ah, that's not how I remember it, but look, here we are.
That is definitely how it happened.
Who was going to start left-sided centre-back on Friday? Cam started against Galway. Griff, I would have thought, was nailed on to start there. What are we reckoning?
Like,
it's a bit of a toss-up, really, isn't it? Like,
yeah. I mean, are we? Do we think a Griff, Lukey, Barrett combo would be the likelihood, or do you think there'll be, you know, someone more mobile in there, like a Cam, with a bit of pace? No offense to the other lads, obviously they're quick, but you know, that kind of winger pace, that kind of left full pace. I would have thought you would need a balance. People always talk about balance, don't they? So,
oh, the coaching, the buzzwords coming out, that's our balance.
Balance. Yeah. So I'd probably have Griff myself, but then on the right side, do you go with, it'd be Griff for me.
Yeah. I'd be shocked if Paddy Barrett. So if everyone's fit, Paddy Barrett and Luke are probably definitely going to play. I would have thought, I haven't seen any of Andrew Quinn, literally haven't seen him step foot on a pitch. The games I got to, he wasn't involved in those particular squads. So I really don't know what we're going to get from Andrew Quinn. I do just remember commentating on him in the first division, and he was always very, very calm, which I like. So that's all I can kind of offer on Andrew Quinn. But I'd say this year, like Luke spoke last week about, I think it was at the league launch, he spoke about it, that we've more of a squad this year. And I spoke to him at the Drogheda game as well, and he said the same, that we've an actual squad to work with this year. It's not just that kind of 13 players, maybe. There's more to us now. So like, you're going to get games where you're playing against a lot of pace, and maybe Cam might be a better option as a left-sided centre-back because he is very, very quick over kind of 15, 20 yards. Didn't a few people come out last year during the questions, a couple of players, and said Cam was the fastest player in the team?
Yeah, he's known for being very, very quick.
Yeah, so like, he's going to be a good fit for some games. Other games, like, you might be playing a little bit narrower and want a Griff in there who's a bit more experienced, maybe a better defender than Cam is. But then, like, Cam gives you a lot going forward. Even, like, if you have Tyreek bombing on down the left and you have Cam coming up behind him as well, that's difficult for any defender to deal with. So, it's, I don't know, I think there's a lot of scope for, don't want to say rotating, but different horses for different courses.
Like, without any kind of disrespect, would a trio of Barrett, Lukey, and Griff, would that have the pace, or would you be comfortable enough with a Tyreek or a Gav Malloy on the left side and a JR or a Shane Farrell on the right side? Would give you enough cover? Or
if you're being honest, and look, we have to be honest, I don't want to be accused of, oh, you know the players, you're not going to have a pop at them. Like, that's a fairly slow back three, being fair and being honest. Like, Luke would be the first one to say that he lost a bit of his athleticism with his injuries. He said that himself, so I'm not doing him any disservice. Paddy Barrett, I just presume, isn't particularly pacey because he's built like a fridge freezer. So
he hasn't played a lot in the last year.
Yeah. And I mean built like a fridge freezer in a good way. That's not a knock. That's not a slight. He's just a beast of a man. And Griff's a funny one. I can remember him blatantly being outpaced once. That was in Dundalk when he got sent off for the pullback. But like, is Griff slow? I don't know. But Cam is definitely quick, if that makes sense. So it might just depend on, again, kind of who we're playing against. The other one from Galway that I thought was interesting was that Jack Moylan started through the middle. Boydie didn't. Is it just you leave Boydie out, maybe wind him up a little bit and have him fully raring to go on Friday? Or has Jack just taken to that kind of, he called it false nine when I spoke to him after the Drogheda game. It's, again, is it just one of them things that depends what you're up against? Like, Drogheda are likely going to start with Conor Keeley playing centre-half. I'd love to have a Jack there dropping in and dragging Conor Keeley left, right and centre and dragging him all over the place, letting his head spin, and then everyone else enjoying all the space in behind. But
Matty Smith?
Yeah, like imagine a Farrell and a Smith coming into those bits of space that Conor Keeley's leaving behind. Like that's, you're going to rip teams apart. But at the same time, Boydie, top scorer last year, I think he was the third top scorer in the whole division. Can you go into a season not starting Boydie?
Well, we were stronger when we had Boydie playing. There's no doubt about that. It's a little bit similar to when Luke played. We were stronger at the back. When Boydie played, we had an awful lot more attacking emphasis and maybe like a kind of focal point. Like I think Boydie did get some unfair criticism last year from some quarters. Yeah. People looked at the disciplinary record and they made their own judgments on that, because to be fair, he's probably suspended more than anyone else. But the games we had him, he did really, really well for us. And I think the reason he did well for us is also the reason he served so many suspensions. I think he has an edge to his game. I think he's a personality that brings a massive amount of, I don't know what you call it. Like it's an element of passion. There's an element of edge. It's probably a bit of a chip on the shoulder, and it suits him. It's what made him one of probably the most handful for defenders last year in the league. So the element that you'd want to get out of his game, which is that kind of, it's not really a temper, but it's that kind of impulsiveness, is also, I think, a strength. So I do think Boydie got an unfair rep last year because he was a vital player for us. And I think he deserved a bit more credit than he got from some quarters. Now, we have a natural tendency to focus on the negative over the positive, and just probably, you know, a handful of people who had a go, but you remember the handful of people had a go and you forget about the people who thought he was brilliant for us. Human nature. But I would think that I wouldn't be trying to play clever or anything like that. I'd start with our strongest team, obviously horses for courses, against Drogheda, and I wouldn't be trying to dictate or change our shape or our selection based on what we think they might do, you know.
But is it really our strongest team if Jack Moylan's not in it?
It might be, yeah, it might be. I thought it was interesting last week when you went through this with Adam, and he came with an 11 that didn't have Shane Farrell, who was, you know, our young player of the year last year, probably one of our better players. Like we have way more options this year than we did last year. Like even from an attacking point of view, if we can go into every single game with Matty Smith, Shane Farrell, Sean Boyd and Jack Moylan fit, like you're just not going to be able to, like unless you're playing Farrell right wing back, you're not going to be able to fit all those players in. So there will be an element of rotation. Like I don't know what the strongest 11 is. It's too soon to say, but I don't think they're going to play every week, you know?
Yeah, that could be a big, big factor for us this year, I think, in that being able to, like if you took Boydie out of the team last season, we were not the same animal. If you took Matty Smith out, we were not the same animal. It might be nice this year to be able to, you know, I'm not saying rest players willy-nilly, but if you have the likes of a Boydie who maybe has been in the wars for a couple of weeks and might be carrying a little niggle, last year he would have had to get up and get on with it because we didn't have an option. Now, you might be able to say, look, Boydie, we're going to leave you out from the start. We'll bring you on for the last half an hour and see how we go. Like I think that is as good as two or three big, huge marquee signings, because all the players know each other. They've formed their little relationships. They know how each other plays. Like there's not massive upheaval. You know, it's not, when you look around the pitch, it's still quite a similar team to last year, just with other bodies dotted into it. It's not a complete overhaul, which I don't think ever works. That's always a bad way to start the season.
That's what Bowes did. And like, I think they probably made more signings in the summer break last year than any other team I can remember. Was it like 8 or 9?
Yeah, yeah.
Something crazy. And it actually went the other way. It got worse. And now Declan Devine is left trying to clear out some of them and get rid of them. Like, I think we've improved our options. Like Aaron O'Driscoll wasn't a key player towards the end of last season. After he kind of got that knock against Bowes, he kind of fell out of favor. But we've brought in Paddy Barrett and Andrew Quinn I haven't seen enough of Andrew Quinn, but I've seen enough of Paddy Barrett to think that he is a step up on Aaron O'Driscoll. We've brought in Kyle Robinson to replace Dan Carr. I haven't seen very much of Kyle Robinson, but from the 30-second clip of him running, he's an upgrade on Dan Carr. So we've brought in players who I'm not sure whether they will be, you know, natural starters, all of them. Like, will Evan Caffrey be a natural starter? He hasn't even been in the conversation yet. Will Tyreek be when Connor Kane is fully fit? Where do you fit in Gavin Malloy if you don't fit him into midfield? But we've upgraded the cover. We have stronger options. Like, there were games last year where we looked on our bench, and not only where we literally didn't have enough people to fill the bench, but you're looking, who's going to come on here and change a game? You know, it's not going to be Dan Carr with the best of intentions. You know, who's going to come on and shore up the defence? It's not going to be Aaron O'Driscoll. So I do think we haven't overhauled, but we've added stronger quality than what's left.
And as well as that, we haven't even mentioned David Torre seems to be back to fitness. That's another option that I feel he would have played a lot more last year had he not gotten that injury that he gotten. We haven't mentioned Gav Hodgins, who I believe is still injured. Now, how long he's out for, I don't know. I'd be lying if I even tried to throw a guess out there. And you have Jad Akiki, who we haven't even spoken about, who at one stage last season, I had said, oh, here, he's going to be gone. We may as well get out and enjoy watching him because he's not going to be here very long. So on the surface, it might look like we've done great business, but those little additions have just given us more elsewhere, if that makes sense. It just rounds off the whole squad. That's the way I look at it anyway, definitely. So I'm looking forward to it. Like, I'm looking forward to the... It's always nice to have a couple of new bodies. I think Paddy Barrett could fit in very, very well. From all accounts, he's... I'm not saying anything nobody else has said before, a bit of a madman, which you need a bit of a madman. I've spoken on here before about good bastards, and I think he definitely has the potential to be one. So I'm excited. Maybe it's because it's the game week and, look, we're only a couple of days away from the start that you do naturally start to get a bit more excited. But I've been looking at the squad a bit more and kind of picturing how it's going to pan out. And I am excited. Like, and I keep telling myself, we just need to stay up again. Like, that's bottom line. Just stay up again. Don't get dragged into anything silly down the bottom. Just be comfortable and see how we go. But again, when I spoke to Jack Moylan after the draw of the game, when I asked him what the goals were for the season, he straight away said Europe. And there was no, like, little smile or nothing like that. It was, no, Europe. And that attitude would have worried me before, because that's just not really how we do things. But I can't help thinking that Duffer is slowly but surely chipping away at that, oh, typical Shells, like, here we go, here's the impending doom on the way. I didn't really feel like that last year. I think he's definitely done a job of changing that mindset. I feel like we're... It's a silly thing, but this time of the season, you see everyone putting up their predictions. And, like, everyone outside of Bowls and Pats fans seem to have us high up the table. And I look at that and I'm like, that's some job to, within the space of a season, flip the attitude, because everyone was seemed to be convinced we'd go down and the manager would walk and we'd be left absolutely nowhere. But I wonder how them people feel now that said Duffer would be gone by, what was the time most people said, by the summer he'd be gone?
I think most people said he'd be gone by Easter. League starts in February.
He's not going anywhere. Where do you see the Reds finishing? I'm not asking you for a league position as such, but how do you see the season panning out for us?
Like, we should have finished at least a place higher last year. Like, there were, particularly at the end of the season, where I think, you know, there's obviously a tendency to have red tinted glasses, but at the same time, you can honestly admit when we were shied away to Drogheda. We were completely bullied and made a bit of a show of. Same against Harps at home in the 3-0 game. Same against Harps away. We were just poor. like I can see when we're poor, and I can also see when we deserve to win games. And particularly when I look at that kind of last run, like the Rovers at home, obviously it's, I think it was a Thursday night or a Wednesday night or something mad because of their European run, but we were good value for our point. They had one chance in the whole game, if you remember, 40 yards out, bit of a pot shot. Like, we were comfortable. How much we improved over the start of the season would give me great heart. I think if we're able to match results with performances, I could definitely see us bettering where we were. Like, when you look at the league's kind of broken up into three places. Title contenders, which I think this year, it should be Derry, it should be Rovers, and if it's not Pats, I imagine they'll be pretty pissed off given the resources at their disposal are, I would say, only second to Derry's. I would think Pats have resources that will be very close to Eclipse and Rovers in terms of the wages they can offer, the stability they can offer. I think they've built very, very well. Rovers are obviously a bit of an aging team, but they know how to win, and they have added a bit of quality. Derry should be thereabouts with everything they have. I still think they might be a little bit too nice. They might be a bit soft. But then again, they've won a cup and they did it in ruthless fashion. So have they maybe dispatched that? I don't know. President's Cup, I wouldn't read too much into it. Then you have the teams that will probably struggle, which look realistically, I think it'll be Drogheda, it'll be UCD. I think Cork will have too much to get dragged into that. And then there's the best of the rest. Like, I don't look at Bowes, who haven't signed a centre half before yesterday or the day before, and think they would be justified trying to be top of the, like, there's no one that you look at and say, oh, they'll clearly be the top of the best of the rest. I don't look at Sligo and particularly think that they've, strengthened well or will be a formidable side or someone that we can't be aiming at. Without a cop-out, I think 5th, 6th would be a brilliant, brilliant season for us.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
If we can get 4th, bearing in mind you'd expect one of the top three to get to a cup final, maybe win the cup, 4th could be enough for Europe. We win the cup, it's enough for Europe as well. So I do think we probably would be a team that's well suited to the cup, just given kind of the way we play, the little bit of, I'm not sure what you'd call it, whether it's whether it's an underdog thing or whether it's, embracing the fact that most teams and most clubs don't want to see us do well. But yeah, I think 5th, 6th would be an unbelievable, would be progress, would be really, really strong progress. I think we probably should have finished 6th last year and we were very unlucky not to.
I think you're right what you're saying about that middle of the table. There's a spot there for somebody to go out and grab. I'm the same as you. Rovers and Derry, I think, would be a good bit ahead. I'd say Pats would be I'd be shocked if Pats don't take 3rd spot. And after that, I mean, Dundalk, we obviously were given a bye. They failed to fulfil the Leinster Senior Cup fixture. So the Leinster Senior Cup dream is alive for the Reds.
By the way, next round. That should be what happens when teams don't bother to turn up to their fixture.
The
FAI are sitting in Abbottstown and making notes. You don't just reschedule it 4 times. You actually uphold the rule book. They uphold it when it suits them, but not when it requires a little bit of gumption. So, yeah, this is what happens when teams don't turn up for their games, regardless of what excuses they have.
Was there an excuse given by Dundalk? What was the... It seems a very weird one. Like, the Leinster Senior Cup would be generally people putting out 19s and bench players. What? Like, was there an actual reason for it, or did they just not bother their arse?
I enjoy the perception of chaos at Dundalk. Like, I don't actually think there's any chaos, but there's always a perception that it's like 1 minute away from imploding. And I don't know what that is or where it comes from, but I remember there was a time last season where it was murmurs that O'Donnell would leave and there was all sorts of stuff going on no one knew about, and the owners had it 6 months and they were trying to sell it already. And like, I just think they're great. I don't know what it is about them. I don't know why I find them so entertaining, but like, you just don't know what's going on at that club. Like, you, for all I know, they just forgot that they had to fulfill the fixture. Like, you just wouldn't know.
Maybe they were too busy on the phone to the producers of The Sopranos to get somebody home. I'll never forget that. That was one of the strangest things I've ever seen at a League of Ireland game. And I have seen some weird, weird stuff at League of Ireland games. Seeing him walk onto that pitch in Oriel Park with a terrible, terrible version of The Sopranos theme song just on repeat, on a loop, over and over again. It's just, that's something I'll never, ever forget. That was a grim night. The manager went on a mad one. Griff got a red card. Connor Kane got injured. That was just one of those bizarre, bizarre games, Dundalk. On Conor Kane, actually, I believe he's back running and training. Is there any truth to that? You're the man in the know.
I've no idea. I've no idea. I genuinely, people keep always say this to me. It's like, oh, what's going on? And they think I'm some fucking smart fucker when I say, oh, I don't know. I'm trying to be coy.
You're a journalist.
It's genuinely, the truth is, it's better not to know anything, and then you can never be accused of...
I fully agree with that.
Speaking out of turn. Do you remember up in Derry, that same fateful Derry trip? I can't remember what it was, but I got myself in trouble where the manager thought I'd been listening at the door or something.
Oh, that was over the... Yeah, you were asking him questions, and he was like, that's literally everything I just said in the dressing room. We may as well put this out here now. The manager has a knack of throwing me off. I don't know what it is, can't explain it. He done it to me very, very early last season before a game. I asked him, I didn't think it was a silly question for NY TV, but the answer he gave back to me, I basically asked him about the changes he had made, and I said he had made a couple of changes. Now, in my head, I meant like a couple of players had changed position. And he had made one personnel change. So I think A. Dervin came into the team and somebody dropped out of the team. But I said he made a couple of changes, meaning, you know, such and such has moved to centre mid. He's dropped to right back. What's the thinking behind that? And he just looked at me dead in the eye and he said, couple of changes? I thought we only made one. Do you want to talk me through them? And it's just completely true me. I just didn't know what to say. I kind of just laughed and left it at that. But he has this knack of just throwing you off the scent a little bit. And he rattled you in Derry. That rattled you. You were like, oh my God, what's going on? The manager thinks I'm standing outside the dressing room listening in on the team talk all the time.
It was such a random one. It's like, because we took a while to get over. If you remember, it was that fella in a full fucking bodysuit of armor who wouldn't let us walk across the pitch and waited till the ground was empty.
Oh, RoboCop, yeah.
Yeah, the RoboCop fella. So it would have been literally impossible to have been around to hear what was said. And I think I was more so worried, does he think that I've asked someone what was said and they've told me what was said? And does he think someone else in the dressing room is a bit of a mouth? So then straight away, you're doing mental gymnastics. And it's a throwaway comment. But at the same time, you're like, is it a throwaway comment?
Do you know what? On the subject of the manager, do you think this year is going to be any different for him? Like, there's not as much fanfare around him. There's still a bit. Like I seen somebody took a photo of the huddles at the league launch. Like, there's one person talking to like Declan Devine. There was maybe two people talking to Stephen Bradley. And then it was just this massive huddle around Duffer. Do you think like this season will be any different for him in that there's not as many eyes on him? He maybe can just go and do his business, you know, under the radar a little bit more. He definitely mellowed out as the season went on, I thought, in the dugout, definitely. He kind of calm down a little bit. I think him and Joey started to kind of do the right, I'm after been roaring and shouting, I'm gonna sit back in the dugout now, you can go out and you do a bit of chatting. Do you think it'd be much different for him with it being the second year and maybe people taking less of an interest in him?
I don't know. Like it's one of these weird things where there always is a bit of a perverse interest in Shells from people outside Shells, and I think it probably goes it's the age of the supporter. So if you remember when Shells were, you know, a successful team who won all around them, there was a massive amount of resentment for the way that we did our business and the way that we carried the club. And there obviously, there always was this kind of anyone but Shells. And I think supporters of a certain vintage have just kept that. And it's only kind of rearing its head now because we'd so long in the first division where, you know, no one really had a reason to care about us because we weren't on radars. We were languishing away, hoping and praying we'd get a first division playoff, but never really up to much for the best part of, you know, 15 years, bar the 1 year up in the Oyo. But like, it's, I don't know if it will mellow out. Like, you would imagine the jokes are pretty boring now. The, you know, saying stuff about every single quote that comes out or saying how he's wrong, what's he talking about? Like, would you not just get bored of it? Like, would you not just get bored of it? Like, at one stage, Bows fans were spending more time talking about our manager than their manager. And, like, it was going terribly for them. But they were still convinced that, you know, our football club was worth more their time and energy and effort. I think there's a certain type of person that obsesses about it. I don't think normal League of Ireland fans really care that much about what a manager says in a pre-match interview. Or
is there such thing as a normal League of Ireland fan?
There are some that are ones that aren't on social media.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, actually. I would agree with that.
Like, at one stage, like, people were screenshotting like the team news and being like, oh, this is really disrespectful. I'm like, I can't believe people from other clubs read the Shells team news. Like, what is the point? Like, this, very rarely do they say anything of substance. They're a licensing requirement. We do it because we have to. We don't do it because we want, like, there's this belief among some that, like, our Shells are never not given interviews. We probably do less than most clubs. In fact, I know we do because there was a League of Ireland workshop before the start of the year, and they were holding up good examples of media engagement and bad examples, and they anonymized them. But we were held up as the bad example and how not to engage with the media. And it's one of these where there's an assumption because we garner so many headlines and so many stories, and they're always very visible, that, geez, we must be never not giving interviews as a football club, or the manager must be never not talking to the media. But I'd say he probably talks to the media less than other clubs. Like, Pats do a weekly press conference before a game out in Bally Oyster, whatever it's called.
Bally Oyster,
yeah. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Bally Oyster. It's definitely not Bally Oyster, I can tell you that.
Bally Oyster, whatever it is. But they literally do a weekly press conference with a player and a manager, and we don't do that. So, yeah, I always find it a bit surprised that they're like, oh, has that fella never not given interviews? Actually, very, very rarely do we do them.
And you know the funniest part of that is he doesn't like doing it. Like, people seem to have this thing that he, like, wants to hog the attention, and I certainly, my dealings with him, he's far from wanting the limelight. I can attest to that one. I don't know about you, but I could definitely say the last thing he wants to be doing before and after a game is having to talk to the press.
Well, most people I talk to don't want to talk to me, so he's no different in that regard.
Oh, jeez. The world's smallest violin. Can you hear that in the background? You've been off work for about 3 weeks, got married, swanned off on holiday, and now you're looking for sympathy.
I don't want any sympathy. I don't want any sympathy at all.
I'm sure you don't. A prediction for Friday.
I still haven't told you what the rest of my back three is.
We jumped around a bit there, didn't we? Yeah, actually. All right, go on. Give me your starting 11.
No. Fuck it. I got away with it. I'm not coming back.
Starting 11.
No.
Come on, quickly.
No, I've no idea, Duty.
That's because you don't know the players' names because you've been away for the whole off season.
All right. Connor Gurns. I'll go J.R. Wilson, right wing back. I'll go Tyreek left. I will go Griff, Lukey Barrett. I will go Connor Coyle, G.A.J. Lunny, Shane Farrell, Matty Smith, Sean Boyd.
I would be fairly certain there's no chance that Gav Malloy doesn't start the game. on Friday.
Ooh. So Gav Malloy in for Mark Coyle then?
I would say so, because that's what started in Galway, and that's like a little partnership. So I would say it's probably JJ and Gav Malloy. I'd say JJ will play because I would expect us to have more of the ball against Drogheda. So, like, JJ's well able to unlock a defence with, you know, a 30-yarder, no problem. So I'd be surprised if JJ doesn't play. But having said that, I really, really like Mark Coyle, so I'd have him in. But look, I haven't won the Premier League or played in World Cups, so who am I to be dishing opinions out?
Are Coyle and Gav Malloy, are they not just very, very similar? Like, JJ is, maybe it's just the kind of his demeanour on the pitch, but he does seem more comfortable with the ball at his feet, or is that just a perception thing?
I think it might be a bit of a perception, because he just has that kind of demeanour. He's very, just looks relaxed all the time, really. Whereas Coyler's probably a bit more hectic in that, you know, he's always buzzing around the place. And but I found, I remember a lot of people giving out about Mark Coyle on the ball in a few games. I think he's very good on the ball. I like Malloy and Coyle because they can both do everything. Like, I understood when it was Coyle and Dervin, it was like, right, okay, maybe they are very similar, because A was more limited with the ball. So that ended up being that Coyler then was dropped right in beside him and they were both being limited. Whereas I think a Malloy and a Coyle together, they can both do everything. They can do box to box, they can break up play, they can be bastards, they can kind of do everything. So I don't know. That I really like Mark Coyle. I think we lost something when he went out of the team with his injury, so that's probably why I'm so keen. The biggest decision I'd say to be made is probably who starts up front.
Boyd, he has to be.
I would have thought that, but I just think it's weird to not play him in that last friendly.
Have you noticed as well that ever since Luke started shaving his head to look meaner, they've all started doing it now?
Well, who else done it? Brian McMahon is actually sporting a new grill wig, yeah. I noticed.
Frank's got rid of the hair, and so has Boydie.
Yeah, actually, now that you say it, there was actually one of the boys put a photo up of the two of them. It was Lukey and Boydie. They put a photo up of themselves. It's like they're both like staring into your soul. It's really weird. It's like one of those, you know, those modelling pictures. It's like a big 200-foot high thing you'd see in New York. It reminds me of one of them where they're just staring out at you. A bit intimidating, I have to say.
I remember when they did their interview with David Snaid in the 42, one of the comments underneath was, before I read the article, I thought this was about two lads who came over from Ukraine to find a better life. And it just made me laugh.
Speaking actually of great articles, David Snaid did another brilliant, brilliant article with Shane Farrell. I don't know, have you got a chance to sit down and read that yet?
I did. It was a brilliant piece of work. I think he got on to me about Shane Farrell a while ago before the cup final, and obviously with Shane's injuries and stuff, it wasn't the time to put him out front and centre. But I think he'd heard the podcast you did with him, and he was very eager to chat with him. So that was that one was a good while in the making, to be honest. Shane, look, he's unbelievably infectious character. His desire and his love for the club and his kind of rooted in family. It's a beautiful piece. It's really, really, really nice. Tough read at times as well, but it's I think it's a lovely kind of way of capturing the essence of Shane, just this, you know, carefree kid who actually has an awful lot of stuff that he's had to overcome to get to where he is. But he walks in to talk every Friday night with a smile on his face and into training every day with a smile on his face and a stinger bar in his back pocket. And it's a lovely piece.
It is. There's an awful lot more to Shane Farrell than meets the eye. I think when you see Shane, he's very casual and, you know, eating the stinger bars and the chicken fillet rolls, and you kind of think he's one of these lads rolled out of bed in the morning and rocked up to play football. But he's a steely, steely young fella, and he's gone through an awful lot. I don't think a lot of people realise it. So it's definitely worth the read. That piece is really, really good. Just shines him in a totally different light. And as I say, there's an awful lot more to him than meets the eye. One bit I never mentioned last week, I had only gotten off the pod when I seen it. Dan Ring from Air Under 17s, he got into the Ireland Under 16 squad. I think it's this week. They have two fixtures against Switzerland. I'm pretty sure it's this week. So just well unto Dan on that. We love seeing young Reds getting into international squads. Hopefully we'll see them involved in the first team soon. Any other housekeeping for us, Dazzler? Club matters?
Big one, obviously, the fans forum next week, Talca yes. Park, next Wednesday, February 22nd at 7 p.m. A great opportunity for fans to come down. We haven't had one of these in person since 2020. COVID has obviously played a massive impact. There was an online one, I think, in 2021. And then 2022, there wasn't any scope to do it because of how quickly kind of the season came upon us. And the bar was out of commission. If you remember, at the start of last season, there was no license for it. So we couldn't have held it at the bar. So it's the first in-person fans forum. The manager, Damien Duff, will be there. Luke Byrne, first team captain, will be there. Andrew Doyle, the chairman and majority shareholder, will be there. Keith McDarby will be there, the commercial director. Dave O'Connor, the club CEO, will be there, and he has a bit of news he wants to share. And also there will be Brian McGovern, who is one of the club shareholders as well and part owner of the club. So it'll be chaired by John Brennan, the support liaison officer. People will constantly correctly raise grievances about the club and about how things are done and about how fans are engaged with. It's a bit like moaning about the government and not voting. If you really care about the direction the club is going in, and if you want to make a contribution or you want to raise an issue, this is the time and this is the place to come and do it. This is how you can affect change and how you can make a valuable contribution. There's a massive scope there for fans to be part of what's being done, the next phase of where the club is going. So I would implore any Reds fan who can to get down next Wednesday night. If you can't and you want to raise something, you can slo@shelburnefc.ie, pop an email and John will put it through to the floor and try to get some clarity on it. But I can't stress enough, if you care about the club, if you have an opinion and a view on the direction it's going in, there is no point in putting it on Facebook or Twitter and, you know, just hurling on the ditch or lobbing shit from the cheap seats. Come down to Talca, make a positive, negative, doesn't make a difference as long as it's honest and constructive contribution. I think that'd be really important. Should note that Pearl Slattery and Noel King were due to be in attendance. Obviously, it's a football fans forum for the entire club. Unfortunately, Wednesday is the night they train. It was originally set for 6 p.m. to allow them to be there. The feedback from the supporters committee was 6 p.m. was too early for fans, so it was pushed back to 7, which meant then that Pearl and Noel couldn't make it. So a couple of people have asked, why is there a fans forum with no representation from the WNL? It's because they train at that time on a Wednesday, and it didn't suit earlier. It would be seen as too restrictive for fans coming from work and stuff. So there will be a fans forum specifically around the women's side. It'll likely happen after a game, a league game at Talca Park on a Saturday. Details of that will follow. But of course, if you can get down to the fans forum and you do have a question you'd like to raise around the WNL side, you can absolutely do it next Wednesday as well.
And just on that point of the WNL, I mentioned it last week and I'll just mention it again. Obviously, it's been quite heavy on the men's side this week. The season opener is in a couple of days. That's the reason for that. The women will have a full season preview. Don't worry, that show will come out with full attention on their league opener against Cork. So that's going to be with us in the coming weeks. Anything else, Dazzler? We've probably done everything at that stage, have we?
Covered all the bases. I'm looking forward to the fans forum. I think that's going to be, I think it will be really, really important. I think it's, I don't know if it's Lukey's first one as club captain. Probably is. 2020, Gary Deegan was the captain. So I think it's Lukey's first one. It's probably the Damien Duff's first time to like meet the fans in that kind of setting. I know he's met fans in the bar after the Waterford game or in, you know, local pubs after league games. You're giggling away to yourself for some reason there. I don't know why. But yeah, I think the fans' form is really important because, like, it is an unbelievable opportunity. You know, clubs in Ireland don't really do it very often. Clubs in the UK virtually never do it. So I would implore any Shells fan to come down, because if there's something you want to raise, this is the time to raise it.
Hear, hear. I think we've come to an end.
I think there was... Is there nothing else to be done?
I don't know. You're the communications person. You should know.
I probably should know. There definitely is something I've...
Match programme.
The match programme, yes. Thank you for the reminder on that one. The match programme, obviously, we're currently reviewing it. As you know, you're listening to this podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We removed the paywall on all of our content for this season because it was kind of a relic of COVID. Initially, it was all brought in to keep people engaged when they were in lockdown and to earn additional revenue for the club. So that's all gone. All of our media stuff is free to air. It's kind of put the match program in a wee bit of limbo, obviously, because there's no paywall anymore. So there's no subscriber-only content. So yeah, any thoughts and opinions on that? We're looking for new contributors. We would obviously love to keep it going. The match program, it would be great to hear from Shells fans on what they feel could be done with it, or what kind of vehicle they think it should go in. Obviously, it evolved from a physical match program into a digital match program, and then into a paid thing for subscribers. Now it's kind of at the next stage of its life. So yeah, Shells fans and their views are appreciated on the match program.
Gonna kill me to say this, but give us an old like on Spotify or a rating. I believe that does wonders for us, doesn't it? You know how this stuff works.
Yeah, leave a review. If you think Duty is a good host, leave a review saying I love Duties. Duties.
You know what? I dealt with enough of that in school, right? I spent every time the role would be read out, you go through, there'd be Duffy's, there'd be Doyle's, there'd be Desmond's, and then it'd come to Duty. Every time you get... And now, at 29 years of age, I'm still getting it. I own a house, I have a child, and I'm still getting grief off you about surname.
I am a child.
Now, look, I don't want to start bringing up stories, because, I mean... A few people actually got on to be very intrigued about... A member of the media team needed to hang his head in shame after your wedding. Now,
oh yeah,
yeah, I can't really go into it. I can't hang the man out to dry.
Well, you will at the fans' forum to give people a reason to it. Duty will reveal all.
Yeah, we're gonna get Al Smith up on the stage in the bar and everyone can throw rotten fruit and veg at him. Anyway, look, we're definitely done. We're over an hour here. That's you putting me off track.
Pulling you in a million different directions.
Yes. Dazzler, thank you very much for giving up your Tuesday evening, your Valentine's night.
And thanks to you too, Duty.
All those years ago, when I'm sure you were whining and dining poor Laura and bringing her out for Valentine's Day and doing all these massive gestures, did you ever think you'd end up binning her off on a Valentine's night to spend it with me talking about Shells?
I'd say she's absolutely delighted to have a break from me. She's been stuck with me for a few weeks now and is now stuck with me for forever now, really. Divorce is still illegal in this country, isn't it?
It is. It definitely is.
Great. What a republic. No, it's been good. Thanks for having me back. I won't come and haunt you too much. I'll get back into my own place, know my role, and stay away next week and... a bit like what's the name of your man, Vince McMahon, you know, when he came back when he really shouldn't have come back.
Oh dear. Alex. Whoa, brave man lending your name to that.
Alex Ferguson.
So first game of the season, Friday, 7:45. It's live on LOI TV. The league, the season subscription is back, so you get every single game for the amount of money you pay, which is very good. Adam Leonard is going to be the commentator. Dazzler, let the people know who's the co-commentator.
The absolute icon that is Tony Sheridan. Very excited to have Shero. in the box, in the gantry for it. He's, if you're talking about players with CVs, players with ability, there is no one better than Cheryl. I know the players and the management are a big fan of him. He would have been mentioned a few times during that cup run of, you know, make your own history, be like Cheryl. So it'll be great to have him at the games. A few other bodies were lining up. And we'll have Richie Baker in the box in around March time. So a Reds icon will be coming. Stewie Byrne will no doubt make an appearance. We'll definitely have Dean Delaney back. And we would love any suggestions you have for former players you'd like to hear on co-commentary or on the podcast. You can get in touch at Shells FC on Instagram or Twitter. Drop a DM or you can email myself at darren.cleary@shelburnefc.ie or Steve Doody. Is that Steve_Doody on Twitter?
Oh, that's me. That's me.
There you go. So if there's anyone you want to hear from, want to see, I was actually, do you know when you were talking earlier about like, oh, you get that little bit of a lift when you see the your favorite player as a kid? When I messaged Richie Baker and I saw the Richie Baker's type, and I was like, oh, that's fucking class.
Ah, Richie Baker, one of the best. I'd love to sit down and have a proper chat with Richie Baker because I'd say he has some great stories. Because if you ask a lot of the players of that era, you know, who were the messers, who were the kind of, Richie Baker's name generally tends to pop up. So,
Richie Baker, J.R.O.
Yes. You never know, Dazzler, if things go well this year, we might be able to get Richie Baker on the pod.
Yeah, look, Richie is he wants to get involved. He's looking forward to doing commentary. He'll be in the gantry later in March for a game to be confirmed. Cheryl will be there. I'd love to get Gago involved. I'm actually trying to hunt down a number for Gago if anyone has one. So if you have Stephen Gagan's number, drop me a mail. That would be appreciated because we'd love to get Gago in the gantry as well.
And if anyone has found Rocket Man, let us know. Good luck. We're finished. I'm going to get me curry. Dazzler, thanks a million.
Good luck up there, Reds.
This podcast was brought to you by Off the Ball, official media partner of Shelburne FC. For all the latest sports news, visit otbsports.com. Rest in the sunset. Way out on the sea. Oh, carry my loved one.